This episode is sponsored by Zapier, which honestly is the only reason my newsletter growth doesn't look like a hot mess. You probably know this about me, but I work at Beehive, and I also have my own media company that's operated by Beehive, and I run Facebook lead ads using Meta. It's nothing fancy, but every time someone fills it out, a lead form on Facebook, Zapier just snags that event and drops the subscriber straight into my Beehive account. It's super easy to set up. There's no exports required. I don't have to like maintain it over time. I just set up this Zap one single time between Facebook and Beehive, and Zapier takes care of everything. It's an integration that works with Beehive, of course, but also like 8,000 other apps. So if you create a Zapier account and you want to connect your WordPress and your Shopify and your Beehive account and HubSpot contacts or Salesforce contacts, and you want to really integrate these different events that happen across your entire tech stack, Zapier is just that good at making it happen seamlessly. Zapier is my glue holding together my entire tech stack. And if you've got a business and you're trying to integrate your different tech tools across your stack, Zapier is the way to go.
Thank you so much for opening up for us, Daniel. Big Zapier guy. We use Zapier all over the place in demo. So it's sick. And actually with Beehive. Funny That's enough, right. I have like four different Zap workflows because of Beehive. It's sick. It's so easy to use. Like an idiot can literally use it. But dude, how was your Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving was great. We went to Asheville. It was good. I pulled my back. Did I tell you about this?
Ooh, no, but that's some old people stuff. Tell us.
Oh, dude. I don't really know what happened. There wasn't like a specific thing, but I had some discomfort. And then the day after, it was two times as discomfort. And then it was like really bad. It got so bad that I actually went to the urgent care on Thanksgiving Day to just get like relief, pain meds and stuff. So I'm good now. Oh. I'm back in Charleston. I went to the chiropractor this morning. I'm feeling like very optimistic. I must have just tweaked something just the right way where it's just terrible. And once you're there, as dilapidated as me, just like tweaking something just the right way, it can be like a total paralysis. But yeah, otherwise it was good. How was yours?
It was good. It was good. We actually don't do, I think I said this on the last episode, we don't do too much. We went to an Indian restaurant. Kids actually freaked out. So that was a fun time. Do you think this little back thing that you have going on, I think 20 episodes ago, you told us your back's bad, you were running for a long time and you couldn't even move, your neck hurts, you needed steroids in your neck or like shots or whatever, then all this stuff. Is it because you're running again?
No, I don't think it's related. I mean, it's probably not unrelated, but I don't think it's caused by the running. There's
second
just so
cousins.
Much. I mean,
second
I
just have, cousins.
When you have a back like me, anything can upset it. We took family pictures a couple weeks ago and I threw Maverick like way up into the air a few times. And
dude, great pick, by the way.
Like anything. Yeah, anything could cause a flare up. So I think some of it's just overall inflammation. And so just like watching my diet, watching how I'm, you know, consuming inflammation types of foods. I don't know. It's holistic. I'm doing sort of everything I can nowadays to just keep as lean as possible with inflammation and diet and stuff.
Yeah. I have no idea what to do to reduce inflammation. Like a lot of people are like, eat this, eat that, drink this, drink that. I'm like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like there's many
anti-inflammation
different things
diets.
You can do.
Yeah, I mean, reducing gluten intake, reducing dairy intake, alcohol is an inflammation food or inflammatory food or drink. And, you know, just a lot of very basic things you can do. More vegetables, like a vegetable will be anti-inflammation. And so it'll reduce inflammation just by eating them. But like,
interesting.
It's just pretty basic stuff. Yeah. Yeah. But a lot of people have bloated diets and don't even know it. So they just kind of live in a constant state of bloatedness. That's actually why I started taking AG1 a year ago now. Super good for bloatedness and anti-inflammation.
I always got like the off-brand AG1 stuff that's just like at Walmart where it's like 10 bucks. And I don't know if it does anything, but according to the ingredients, I get my daily dose of vegetables through that. So
Whatever. There's it's all greens. Greens are greens are greens. And you know, some of them are probably more potent than others. Whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Hey, Daniel, so if your sons, both of your sons, were sitting on a therapist's couch 20 years from now and they were talking about you, what is the one specific complaint you are terrified that they will have?
He cared more about work than he did about me.
Common theme.
That's my legitimate fear. I'm very mindful of that being a reality if I'm not constantly keeping myself in check. You know, when I go into my office, my kids both know, oh, daddy's working. And I open my door sometimes so that they know they can come in and, you know, whatever. Periodically, I'll have one of them on my lap during a call and very friendly, I think, post, you know, remote work environment in general. Like you have your kid on your lap during a call. Like I've never gotten flack for that with an internal or external meeting. It's just people just are okay with it. But the fact of the matter, the weird kind of dichotomy of working from home, we've talked about working from home a lot, is that I am at home working 50 hours a week. And yes, I'm at home. It's great. I can walk out my door and have lunch with my kids and I can hear them playing together. And, you know, I can say hi and give them hugs and everything throughout the day. But 50 hours of their life every week, I am in this office working. Whereas if you're somewhere else, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. Like, oh, daddy's just at work, but you don't necessarily see them. So I don't know. I think that's my fear though. I think they'll be having therapy sessions about that maybe someday if I don't play my cards right.
So do you think that they're developing a better relationship with your wife? Or do you think this is more so, grooming is definitely not the right word, but like essentially teaching them that like at the end of the day, you will be gone. Because they're going to go to school at some point and you're going to be working when they're at school.
Yep.
You think that this is just kind of teaching them like, oh, in the middle of the day, like people work. And then when they get older, it's like, okay, I go to school, so on and so forth. Or is there anything that plays into that with like relationship building?
I think the way they're growing up is different than when you and I, you know, like the normal, like traditional family in the 80s and 90s is like, I don't know. I mean, that's a great question. That's a great question. I think they know it's normal that dad works. And now my wife, we have a nanny 3 or 4 times a week where she, you know, Palmetto Parents is this media company that we have built together. It's really growing rapidly. And she's no longer able to just do it when she can't. So we have dedicated, I don't know, it's like probably 5 to 10 hours a week of time where we have a nanny that comes and she goes to a coffee shop or just like, you know, goes into her office here at home and works. That's new. As of the last few months, we've started that. And I think they know we have to work. And we've tried to teach them like, hey, we work so that you guys can have a great life and that we can be generous and, you know, we can be giving and find needs in the world and the community and help meet those needs. But I don't know. I mean, 3.5, 4-year-old, I don't know that he can really comprehend all of the nuances of what goes into this yet.
Yeah, probably not. Definitely not the younger one. Do you think that if they were at daycare, you would feel like you work too much still in regards to like being around them versus working?
No. Well, and honestly, I don't know that I do work too much. I think my fear is that they will think I worked too much. Like, I think right now I work a lot. I try to shut the door and be present. And that's something we've talked a ton about here on the show.
Yeah, for sure.
Just really, really being present when you're there. But I think my fear is they will say dad chose work instead of me. The reality is I have to choose work instead of them sometimes right now. That's the stage of life we're in. Like, I haven't made it yet. I can't not work. Like, I'm not a millionaire. I can't just like shut the switch off and say, all right, we're good now. So like, I have to keep doing this, but I think, exactly. Not yet. No, I mean, yeah.
Soon, baby.
Maybe someday. So, you know, I think they get it. My oldest is in preschool 3 days a week right now. Next year, it'll be 4 or 5 days a week. And so he goes, it's like nine to one. So 4 hours, good chunk of time. And, you know, he knows I have to work, but like, yeah, I think there is a part of my brain where when he's at school and the other one's with my wife, you know, doing whatever it is they do throughout the day, I'm like, all right, lock in, like, let's do this. Like, there's literally nothing else that I could be giving my attention to, which I think is some of the things you've described about your coworking space where you're there. You're like, there aren't distractions, even if they're good distractions. Like, oh, I could open the door and see what my kids are up to. Like, nope. If you're at an office out and about, like that's. You like sit down and lock in, you know?
Yep. And so if this is your first time listening, Daniel has 2 boys. I've got 2 boys. We both have 2 boys. And so I feel like I feel like we kind of walk like this fine line, especially in today's day and age. And so I'm going to ask a question about that. What is one part of traditional masculinity that you want to ensure they keep? And what's one part that you're just like, yeah, you don't need to keep that. Like, that's old school stuff.
I think the concept of the man of a house protecting their family, and I'm not getting into like carrying guns and protection and all that. I'm saying like keeping them safe, like them being a fortress for their spouse, their kids, knowing that when you're home or anywhere with me, the dad, the husband, like you are safe. You're safe to be who you are. You're safe to act like you will. You're safe to say what you will, safe to be here with the family. I think that's a traditional, you know, masculine role. I know women can play that role and do in many cases, but like that's one that I think as a father to two sons, I will teach them like, hey, I even already do. Older brother, younger brother dichotomy is just like what you'd expect. They are best friends. They love each other. But a four-year-old doesn't necessarily know how much he can hurt on accident, even the youngest 1.5-year-old. And so a lot of times they'll be playing and they'll get kind of rough. And then, you know, the youngest will start crying. And I, you know, go to the oldest and I say, hey, you have to protect your brother. You're the older brother. He's going to follow your lead. He's going to want to be just like you. It's your job to make sure he's safe. It's your job to make sure you protect him. And you got to look out for what the things that maybe you could do with someone who's also 4 and big like you, but you can't do with someone who's small and still delicate. And so these very early concepts of you being a protector, I think that's a healthy masculine role. Some of the things that I don't think are healthy that I'm trying to healthy about the traditional masculine role that I'm trying to really teach them to exhibit are emotions. I think traditional masculinity says that men or boys should not be emotional. You know, suck it up, wipe off your knees. It's fine. You'll be fine. But actually look at the science. Men, specifically boys, pre-adolescent and adolescent, are insanely emotional. Unbelievably emotional. I mean, you look at my own childhood, half the reason I got in trouble all the time was because I was just an emotional wreck. And so when you look at a 2-year-old crying because he scraped his knees, or a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old crying because someone hurt their feelings or they weren't picked in tag or whatever happens when you're 5 and 10 years old, I don't know. Yeah, my kids aren't that old yet. Like, that's okay. You should be sad. You should be able to cry and express your emotions. Obviously, yeah, there's a controlled environment. Like, let's not be chaotic for the sake of being emotional, but like you should be able to be emotional as a boy, yeah, as a man. And I think the generations long toxic masculinity will say, well, you know, suck it up. Don't be emotional. You're a man, be a man. It's like, well, let's undo that. I think when my kids 10 and 15 years from now are emotional, like they'll know there's a time and place to be emotional and also express those emotions. Ideally, someday with like a partner. Like, I feel safe expressing my emotions with my wife. And that's because we've built a relationship over, 10 years where like I can be myself and really share what I'm feeling in those moments, yeah, with her. And she's my wife and she's great at hearing those moments. So.
Yeah. Dude, that's huge. I've never thought about this until you just spoke about it, but it was, what was it? I wish I could remember that. Maybe, Suicide Awareness Month. What month is that? It just happened.
I think it's October.
October, November, right? No, let's look it up. Yeah, look it up real quick. Fact
check
this
real
quick. Because it just happened and I saw a lot of posts about it.
Yeah, September officially recognizes National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. Yep.
Okay, that's why I recently saw something. I saw something along the lines of men typically commit suicide more than females. And do you think that, and a lot of it came down to, there was one specific stat, I wish I could remember. You could probably look it up now. It's very popular and it's like, X% of men do not speak up, and then that's why they commit suicide. Do you think that the traditional masculinity of like just be a man has caused a lot of this, I guess, mental health issues or these mental health issues in you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm thinking of it right now on the spot. So I'm just like, huh?
Yeah,
we've been taught to not be emotional, and a lot of people don't speak up. Yeah, go ahead.
I'll read a couple stats first. Approximately 40% of men have never spoken about their mental health with anyone. And 29% of those say they're too embarrassed to speak about it. And then there's a few other stats. While 20% say there's a negative stigma on the issue. Biggest cause of mental health issue in men's lives are work, 32%, finances, 31%, or health, 23%. So 40% of men polled said it would take thoughts of suicide or self-harm to compel them to get professional help. So those are some staggering statistics. I pulled those. I'll tell you exactly where I pulled those directly from, priorygroup.com. We can put the link to this study in the show notes. There's a couple infographics that are worth looking at as well. But I am unfortunately very familiar with suicide in my life. My roommate in college took his own life when I was on my way to school one day. I frequently would take him to class or work. He worked part-time at the campus. And I remember the morning it happened, I was like, hey man, you good? You need to go to work today? I'm on my way to class. You want me to take you, you know, to work or whatever, to campus? He goes, no, I'm good. All right, man. Well, you know, hit me up if you need anything. 45 minutes later, I get a call that he took his own life at my house. And I remember no one's prepared to receive that call. It was someone very close to me called me. I was at a coffee shop studying for an exam. And they said, Daniel, are you sitting down right now? And I said, yes. And they said, I won't say his name. He took his own life. And I yelled. I didn't even know what to do. I said, what? Top of my lungs. And then I started hyperventilating as I walked out of the coffee shop, almost passed out. My then friend, Courtney, current wife, happened to be there and kind of followed me out. And I was a train wreck. To this day, even I can get bottled up thinking about it, because it was the worst moment of my entire life by far.
Yeah.
And me and I have several other roommates that lived in that house all had to seek counseling. And I mean, it was just a really, really, really difficult time of life. Fast forward a few years ago, one of my best friends took his own life. And I got the call from another friend who was already in tears on the call calling me. And so you hear the breath of someone on a phone and you answer it and you know your heart sinks. You know what you're about to be told is going to change your life forever. And it did. And I could name other instances like this. I believe men are struggling silently. The stats we just read says that this is the case, but I believe it's happening so often right in front of us that we need to ask questions. We need to draw people out. We talked about this in a couple episodes ago.
Yeah.
Like asking good questions. We talk about this in sales all the time. Discovery questions. Ask questions that make the other person talk about themselves, talk about their pain, talk about what problems they can't solve. We need to do that inquisitively with our friends, because most of them, 40%, that's a lot. So maybe not most, majority, 40% of the people in your circle statistically are dealing with mental health problems that they're not talking to anyone about. And I think you mentioned a TikTok about, you know, a mom whose son had taken his own life, and it was like, you know, there were signs, and it was all these videos and a compilation of videos where he was happy and having a great time. And then all of a sudden he had taken his own life. The problem is there aren't signs. That's the point of this video compilation. A lot of times there are zero signs. When it happens, it is shocking. There was, quote, nothing you can do, but actually what you could have done is just ask the really uncomfortable questions. Hey man, are you actually doing okay? I'm concerned about you. Who cares if he gets offended? If you're concerned about someone, that's a good friend saying, hey man, I'm concerned. You haven't responded to my messages the last month. I haven't seen you at the regular X, Y, or Z thing for the last few weeks. You know, I don't know. Maybe it's your wife tells me something's up. Like, she's concerned about you, so she asked me to talk. I mean, whatever situation brings it about, ask the questions. Put yourself at risk in order to make sure that your friend who you care about is not at risk. I implore you who are listening to this, your risk is not as great as the risk to your friend's livelihood if there is something that should be discussed that they're not talking to anyone about.
I'm gonna let that simmer for a bit, because that's important. And I think that we did talk about this, what, two episodes ago, where I'm kind of, everyone, I'm okay, but I'm one of those where I'm like, if I'm struggling or if I'm, you know, emotionally sad or emotionally just like beat up or burnt out, I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna get over this. I'll get over this by myself. I'm good. And I never say anything ever. Again, I'm good, but I think it's important to hear that, like, I'm definitely not alone in this. And I would even argue it's probably more than 40% of people that don't actually, and men that don't actually express how they're truly, truly feeling inside. So it's huge. That is huge. I'm going to bring you back in to a couple of questions. It's like, how do you derail that serious conversation and such a heartfelt conversation to coming back to these questions? But it's what we do with this podcast. your four-year-old, like at this point, he's got his own personality, right? He's developing it more and more every single day. Is there any personal trait that you have that you can see that he's starting to have that you wish he did not have? Where you're like,
I wish
you got that from
have.
Me and I wish you didn't.
I don't think I'd say anything I wish he didn't have. I think he's a very interesting combination of my wife and I. He is rambunctious and articulate and silly, all like me, looks like me too. Super tall, like big for his age. He just, he just looks, I know he's going to have a bald spot when he's 28. So all those qualities, like you look at him, you're like, oh, that's obviously Daniel's son. But whereas I, at his age, was fearless. I did anything. I would get hurt all the time from doing things you shouldn't even do, like climbing on the top of the, the playground. And, I was already doing like BMX and rollerblading and skateboarding. And I played hockey, like all the stuff that's just like kind of extreme, doing all that. He's very like, I'm not going to do this until I'm confident. I'm going to do it perfectly. And so that's my wife. My wife is very like measured and cautious. I'm like immeasured and immeasured. I don't even know this word. I just go and I do it. And I'm like, well, ideally I live, ideally I survive this crazy thing. So I don't know. I haven't thought, oh man, I wish he wasn't like that. That's clearly for me. But he is definitely developing. Like he is 100% his own person. And it's like, oh wow. It's so cool to see a person take on the shape of both parents. I mean, I love that.
Yeah. It's sick. And it's so cool to watch Liam grow up. And he's in a phase right now. He's in a little testing phase. How far can he push the boundaries and test us with, hey, will you go pick that up? No. I'm like, all right, will you please go pick it up? Are you listening?
The stubbornness starts to show.
Starting to show. Is there any pre-dad life feeling or moments that you grieve now that you are dad?
Kind of. I just bought a treadmill a week or two ago. It's a Nordic Track 2950.
I was going to say, there's no way you're going like cheap.
I got Facebook Marketplace. I always get the best thing I can find on Facebook Marketplace. It was nice though. It has a huge TV on the front. It's built-in coolness. But the reason I did this is because now that both kids, I can watch both kids for a whole weekend. It's awesome. They're both sleeping well. Like we're in a new stage of life where my wife can go and do stuff at night because I can handle the kids. This wasn't until recently that our youngest would even like allow that. But a lot of times she'll go do something with friends at night or have like something for work and I'll be at home and the kids will be asleep. And I'm like, oh, what a perfect opportunity for me to go running. Well, you can't do that. Your kids are asleep and you got to stay at home. And so I'm like, all right, well, then what do? I like watch TV, work more, or like read. I'm like, it's like not that much stuff to just do while you're alone while the kids are asleep. So that's why I got a treadmill, because I can run in a garage when my kids are asleep and Courtney's out. Like it's a literal perfect situation. I've already done it. And there's like three or four times this week where I'm going to be able to take advantage of that. So when you say like mourn, I don't know, I think the flexibility of what you do after, like at night, like when you have kids until they're old enough to be alone, which is like a lot of time from now, for me, they go to bed and you're locked in. Obviously you get babysitters and nannies and we do that all the time. But like with that exception, you have your kids' bedtime and that's your own kind of built-in schedule in your life. And, I certainly miss the days where I could literally do whatever I want at any time of the day or night. You just can't do that when you have kids. You can't just do whatever you want, whenever you want.
Yeah. I think that we miss that as well. It's like we're out with friends and, their kids and it's 7 p.m. Kids for us, our kids, we pick them up from daycare 4:45-ish. It's like, wow, it's already 7. Well, we got to go home and get ready for bed. Yep. And then we're stuck inside. But so something you talk about a lot in this podcast is just how amazing Courtney is, how much she does, how great she is as a wife, as a mother, all this stuff. Who do you think is carrying the bigger mental load right now? And do you think she would agree?
Mental load for what?
For everything, life, right? Like, so the entirety of just being a mom, being a wife, being a father, being a dad, things like that. So like you have work, right, on your plate. And then you also have Palmetto. And then you also have this. And then you also have the kids. She's got the kids full time. She also has Palmetto. I'm sure she's got other stuff going on, maybe some family things. So like, who do you think is carrying the the larger portion of the mental load? And would she agree with your answer?
I think we would both really struggle to even answer this question. I carry the mental load of our lives operating financially. Like, that's all on me. And I have to make sure that we are able to save and pay our bills and pay for life. But like, parenting, she is a full-time mom and she is the one who knows our children best, knows their schedules. I know all these things too. Like I said, I just watched them for like 4 days, a couple weekends ago. She was in Boston. It was great. But like, with those exceptions, I mean, she's the mom all day, every day. And so even like the way our schedules are, we have a pretty good system where we have a shared calendar and we put things in there and, you know, we'll tell each other about stuff, but we put it in the shared calendar. It's at the point where if it's not in the shared calendar, it doesn't exist. And for my own mental sanity, that's how I have to operate because I live by a calendar so frequently in my current life that like, if it's on the calendar, it's just like, I just can't remember it. So in that sense, like she is the keeper of the calendar. She knows what the kids need and when they need it. She'll coordinate a lot of when we have dates, every weekend, she'll coordinate the nanny who will, if we need a nanny, I mean, sometimes it's like, you know, timing, my mom might come over and stuff, but usually it's a nanny at night. Who carries the mental load? I think we'd both agree I'm more stressed, whether or not that's because I'm carrying a larger mental load or not. Mm. Yeah. I think we'd probably both say me. I think if we had to say, I think we'd both say me, but I don't know if that's because that's true or if it's because she just handles her stress better than I do.
I love your answers. Your answers are always so like strategic and
I should go
you
want to
make sure that you're
huh?
not, I know that you're
President
not saying
of the United
wrong,
States.
The wrong thing. You do. That's exactly how you answer questions. Do you ever pretend to be bad at like a specific chore around the house just so you don't have to do it and so that she doesn't ask you to do it?
Like, what a specific question. No, I have to ask you this question right now because you obviously have one that you've thought
No. I don't think I do. I don't think I do. Let's see.
No, I think there's chores that like we both know is usually going to be done by the other person. Like I always take the trash out. It just, we've never really discussed it. It's just like I do. I always take the trash out. You know, we both kind of share the load with vacuuming, although a lot of times she'll vacuum more because she has time during the day when I'm working to vacuum. Like cleaning up clutter, we'll both typically do that in the living room at the end of the day. You know, kids throw stuff everywhere every day. Your house is a wreck and then you clean it up. That's just how it works. But yeah, I mean, no, I don't think there's cleaning the bathrooms, maybe. I hate cleaning bathrooms. I hate cleaning bathrooms.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't refuse to. I will. But like, I definitely procrastinate.
Leave it dirty next time. Like, I swear I cleaned it.
Yes.
I don't know if I feel like I hate changing diapers and I know that's just part of it, but I feel like I just did it for so many years with Liam. And of course it resets every time we have another kid. And so I never act bad at it, but I think that she usually changes them the most. However, little one, baby Harrison, he is fighting for his life to not get his diaper changed. So a lot of times I'll even go in there and just hold him down so she can, you know, that phase. And so
are you brushing his teeth yet?
Sometimes we brushed
Liam's
every single day when he got his first tooth. We definitely are way more lenient with Harrison. Dude, and we probably should start brushing more, but
I literally have to, I'm straddling him leg on both sides of his body.
Yep.
I take my arm and shove both of his arms on his chest.
Mm-hmm.
And I take my other arm and I hold his head and then I brush him like this. Cause he won't let, and he'll just close his mouth. And so I have to like rip his mouth open. Now he's got like, I don't know how many teeth now, like basically a full mouth of teeth. Oh, it's so annoying. I'm like, dog, just let me. And people, oh, the baby teeth are all going to fall out. I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's not how like oral hygiene works. Like, yeah, they're all going to fall out, but like, seems like you need to brush them. I don't know. We brush our kids' teeth, but like it is my least favorite thing to do. I will change. If I had to choose between changing diapers and brushing teeth, I would change a diaper every single time. I hate changing diapers, but I'll do it every single time because I hate brushing teeth. It's so annoying. So annoying.
Let's see. So Liam, we're really big into like snot sucking. I don't know why. I think we talked about this on a very early episode. I hate when I see kids with just
gross
gunk all coming out of their
nose.
But
also they can breathe better when you do it. So
exactly. And there's sometimes parents that I see drop their kids off at daycare where I'm like, you should have taken care of that before. But
yes,
anyways,
or like keep him at home if it's bad.
Yeah, or, yeah. It's, some of these are just like, I know
like so gross.
three seconds away from not being able to breathe ever again.
It's so nasty. So
all that to say is Liam hated, kind of like what you just said with snot sucking, brushing teeth, hated when we did the snot sucker. And same thing. Yeah, I would, both arms, like we would have to do it as a team effort. I couldn't do it by myself. So it's like, I have both arms and both legs. Like I'm like pretty much sitting on it with holding both arms and she's getting the snot sucker and she's going after it. It's pretty bad. But no, right now, Harrison's just rolling so much and he does not want to lay on his back. It's bad. But no, there's no actual chore that I think we kind of have things split up. I'm 100% of the dogs. So I've got two dogs. So feeding them, walking them, all three walks a day, all that stuff, all me. She's pretty much 100% cleaning, but I pick up at, like if I'm cooking, no bigger pet peeve than having a dish, especially if there's food on it in the sink. It drives me nuts.
Oh, don't.
Grosses me out, dude.
You gotta put, like, yes. People just throw their gross dishes in the sink with like their food still on it. I'm like, junk off in the trash can, depending on what's on the plate,
dude.
But also like rinse it off. Like,
yeah.
That's why you have a disposal. I mean, most people have a disposal. A lot of people don't, but like, if you have a disposal, use a disposal.
Drives me nuts,
it's
man.
Rough. And it's rough.
I mean, I think in college, I probably just threw stuff in the sink and I got to it, you know, whenever I got around to it for sure. But now if I see any food, I'm like, why is that in the damn sink? Go clean this thing. So I'll clean it and whatever. So
do you wash your dishes while you cook if you're cooking a meal? Or do you dirty all the dishes, eat, and then wash all your dishes?
Depends on how long the meal stays hot. And so I will say if I'm cooking for myself, what typically would happen is I'd go cook lunch. Let's just say it's tacos. So I'll, you know, brown some beef, all that fun stuff. And when I make my tacos, like it's too hot to eat right then and there. So I will wash that skillet, clean it, put it back, and then I'll go eat. But when I'm cooking for the whole family, and they're pretty picky, so they're not always eating the same things as us. It's like multiple different things. So it's almost hard to clean everything before. So what our normal routine is Monday through Thursday, if we're not going out to eat, our normal routine is I'll typically cook and then we all eat together. And then one of us goes and bathes. Whoever's not bathing the two kids will go into the dishes after them. So that's our normal routine right now, but I can't leave it out. It bothers me. It drives me nuts. It drives me nuts. Gosh, if you're doing that, stop.
Yeah, to you listening, if you are doing that.
Yeah.
Dude, did you set up your Beehive account for your TikTok chicken eating thing?
Yeah, and I actually have somebody that I'm working with right now.
Nice. All
right. I'm gonna this is laying it out. Love Beehive. Okay. Love Beehive. Have this cute little site.
Don't even, I hate where this is going.
No. Y'all are making improvements and it even says beta, like the kind of AI website builder.
Oh, for sure.
But the customer success, I don't know who I'm talking to actually. I just messaged him today. Victor Trade Tech?
Oh yeah. He's the man. Yeah, he's a solution engineer.
So he's been helping me because there's like some things where it's like, why is it expanding this when it shouldn't be? I'm telling it not to expand it. Yeah. But I'm building a site right now. I have somebody even like helping me a little bit with it. Yeah, what up, Victor?
You're the man. Also, new dad.
Ooh, congrats,
don't call him
dude.
V. You could call him V. He probably won't respond.
Yo,
I've
v,
never
you
heard
care?
Anyone call him V until right now. Congrats on V for becoming a dad. Came back from paternity leave. He's probably like, why is this idiot Troy wasting my time?
He probably wants a break. He's like, hey, babe, somebody just messaged me. I gotta take care of this. 3 hours later,
that's
it's like
great.
One simple thing. Yeah, but he's doing
no,
really
actually,
helpful.
You're with beta products, the feedback is probably really well received. So that's good if you're finding areas of improvement.
Yeah.
That's what
and they reset the daily limits to like 24 hours. It was like, I think I had like 5 or 10 prompts in the beginning to change around the site. And then now it's just like and it was like a month, but now it's daily, so it's sick too. Hmm. But this week, I will have it all done and ready in Beehive. I need to create like a welcome letter, stuff like that. But on the chicken wing things, hit a million views in 3 weeks.
Good for you.
6,500 shares, so we're getting there.
Good for you. I went viral again this week.
Let's go.
I can't
stop.
We're
so good
at this. I can't stop going viral. I have almost 10,000 likes on this thread. Wendy's replied. Lidl replied. Just like... Like there has to be a record for most viral nobody in the history of the internet.
And it's you.
I'm somewhere up there because I got less than 600 followers on Threads, and I have an insane amount of impressions and virality there. Same with X, now almost 10,000 followers there, but still, that's not a lot. That's like not that many in the grand scheme of things. For me to be going like mega viral with only 10,000, LinkedIn's the only place that I actually have like a meaningful follower, like almost 25,000 now. But you know, I don't like LinkedIn anymore. LinkedIn's algorithm is so frustrating. I don't like it. They're like, oh, push videos. I do so many great videos on LinkedIn and I get like 100 videos impressions.
Videos are a butt.
LinkedIn's just proven so annoying.
I just texted somebody today saying they were like, hey, I haven't seen you on LinkedIn in a while. And I said, probably my fault because I don't care about LinkedIn right now. Like I don't like it. The platform.
I'm gonna put a post on LinkedIn today. I'm gonna be taking my talents elsewhere. If you need me, follow me on X and Threads.
Tag the CPO.
No blackmail. Just this dude. This place sucks.
That's kind of like
I don't like LinkedIn anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of why I'm expanding into TikTok. And honestly, like a couple things. One, to not talk about, and that's actually why I love this podcast. To not just like strictly talk about B2B is so nice. And two, just being able to eat food is kind of cool. A lot of places hit me up for free stuff. So that's sweet. I love that. I don't know if it'll go anywhere. I don't really care. It's just like,
yeah, who cares? Have a good time.
I've had 19 wing places in the last 22 days. I'm a fat lard.
That's funny. That's a lot. That's a lot of wing places. The thing about creating content is if it doesn't directly make you money, the act of doing it consistently will lead to opportunities.
100%.
I mean, when I follow the thread of the last December 2025, the last like 8 years, and when I started really leaning into just making stuff online, everything leads to a better thing. I mean, quite distinctly, I can trace all the different jobs or skills that led to the next job or skill that led to the next thing. And I'm like, it's just training yourself to just kind of always do it is the easiest way. You know, you look at the horizon of 5 to 10 years of just doing something consistently, it's like, dude, put in the reps and it's going to pay you back in you know, dividends well beyond what you can even comprehend.
People sleep on that. And two, I think it's just because it's kind of embarrassing to put yourself out there. Mm-hmm. I've got a buddy, he played college basketball and now he's like a head coach for the varsity team at a high school. Incredible basketball player, incredible coach as well. And so now what he's doing is he's kind of like learning how to almost like teach these high school kids, like out of the high school team that he teaches, there's probably two or three that like really want to make it to the NBA. So what he's doing is he's learning, how do I teach these kids to have everything that they possibly need and can have to make it to the NBA? But he's doing this and he's like creating his own little business from it, right? Like what he wants to do is go to high school, is like, let me work with your high school students. I'm going to teach them these traits and then yada, yada. Like it's going to lead to X, Y, Z. Yep. But I say that because he recently did his first podcast and he sent it to me and it was a great podcast. And I said, dude, great pod, learned a ton about you. Keep doing stuff like this. The more you put yourself out there, the more amount of opportunities will fall into your lap. And it is so true that if you just remove that single little inkling of just being embarrassed of putting yourself out there, doors just open. Like they just do. That's all it takes.
And you never know what's going to pop off. I mean, the posts I have that have gone crazy viral, you never know. I mean, the more you do it, the more you kind of suspect something's going to pop off.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of times why I do. I'm like, there's no other reason than I'm like, this is going to pop off. I'm going to post it. But like the ability to do that is actually something companies want. It's like, they call it growth hackers. They call it, you know, all the different words they have for it. But like someone who knows a post or piece of content will be successful. A lot of people can't do that. Like a lot of people don't have that. But if you are chaotically online for years and years and years and you understand the way the internet culture speaks and you understand that language, you're 100 steps ahead of most people. Even people who are like social media managers, like they went to school for it sometimes. I mean, and I'm not like putting all the social media managers under the bus.
No, all of them are really good.
Really good at what they do. Honestly, Bella Rose at Beehive is one of the best. But it takes someone who gets the intricacies of each different platform, the viral coefficient of a real brand and a cohesive voice, but also like you have to know how the internet works.
Yeah.
And most people don't. I mean, most people aren't, they don't get what TikTok and Instagram and LinkedIn and Threads and, you know, they don't get what all those different things really do, how they each speak on their own. Yeah. Reddit and all the there's so many nuances on the internet that you really have to like deeply understand to do it well.
Yeah. And that's something that I think you do really well. Even myself, I think I do it decently well. It's like, we kind of know what can go viral. Like I could probably post a meme right now and it'll go decently viral on LinkedIn, right? Like, so that's arbitrary, but we kind of know what goes viral. You're incredible at the X thing. Like, I haven't even sniffed in that direction, but that's kind of why I think this TikTok thing will pop off. Is like, I feel like I have a little bit of an idea of what can go viral.
But they say if you don't hate your first post, if you don't hate your first post 12 months down the road, it means you waited way too long to start posting. So I think people always want to perfect it. I'm thinking about doing, I follow a guy, Quinn, on X. He does a daily video, just posts a video random every single day. Yeah, it's always a talking head video, just some stuff. 3 or 4 minutes long. Like, you know, he just kind of, I don't even know. I mean, there's not like a single thing. It's always whatever. Thinking about doing something like that in 2026. I don't know if it would be daily. I just don't want to overload myself with bandwidth.
Yeah.
But like, we talk on the podcast. We have the setup. I know what it takes to produce videos, and especially like short 3 minute clips. Like, why not? I think I'm probably going to do something like that just to start talking more and putting out more content. But we'll see. I mean, we put out a lot of content already. I think we just need to lean into some of it a little bit more. Yeah.
But on X or what?
I don't know. Maybe X, maybe a YouTube channel. No, not LinkedIn. Maybe a YouTube channel, maybe X, just native video on X. They're doing a lot with video on X right now. And yeah, we'll see.
I know we're coming up on time here. I don't know. So I'm posting these videos, not all of them, on Shorts, Reels, and TikTok.
Yeah.
Reels is my lowest performing one by a landslide. And I didn't have Instagram for 3 years, so I don't know Instagram, but I just kind of assume like, oh, short form videos, people want to know about restaurants and wings, like this should pop off. I thought for sure the style was going to pop off on Instagram. I was actually going to go try to not consult, but meet with people that I know that kind of do Instagram decently well, because I can't pop off on Instagram for the life of me. YouTube Shorts is doing okay. It's doing all right. Like thousands of views each one, but still.
I think Reels and TikTok are very different, but I do think Reels is going, is optimizing consistency. So
just keep on doing it.
Yeah, keep on doing it. It'll find the audience, but Reels has started doing a test period. I don't know what they call it. I think it's called a test period, where you post a video and it tests your video against audiences not following you. And it basically has it in a beta holding period until it finds an audience. Again, one that's specifically not following you, that it thinks it falls into that category. And then it releases the video to that specific category or audience. And it's like a snowball effect. Like, if that audience accepts it and engages with it on that first post beta release, then it releases to another one and another one. I have no idea if TikTok does that. I don't think it's the same algorithm at all, but I've noticed that with Reels. And I just actually found out about that last week. I was doing a little bit of digging. But they're very different. I mean, you got to treat them like totally different platforms, even though they're both short form.
Yeah. Interesting. I got to figure it out.
Cool.
I have no idea. But awesome, Daniel. Great episode, man. Where can they find you?
We can find Two Dads in Tech. TwoDadsInTech.com. Find us at TwoDadsInTech.com. Subscribe on YouTube. Rate us on Spotify. We are coming up on a full year of Two Dads in Tech. In fact,
is this it?
This is our 52nd episode. Our first episode went live December 11th, 2024. So 1 week from now will be 365 days of Two Dads in Tech, which is...
That's unbelievable.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
We've done almost 600 videos on YouTube. Over 1,000 videos if you look at YouTube Shorts, YouTube, and Instagram Reels. We are scratching the surface. I think 2026 is going to show us what's really possible here. We got some cool things in the pipeline. Tell your friends. We want to expand this bad boy, and I think we can. Find us on Two Dads in Tech. Hit us up. Give us some ideas. We want to talk to the people. We want to talk about what the people want. Thanks for listening. See you next Wednesday.
We'll see you next Wednesday, everyone.